Welcome to the sidelines. We are back after a week plus break. I am Matt Dolliff. I am back again with Ty Anderson for 98.5 Sports Hub. If you're listening to this, thank you for your patience. You probably saw that I was taking a break from everything for a while. I had a bad time last week. I guess I don't really want to get into details there. Had to take care of some personal stuff, some family stuff, not necessarily related, and there was just a lot going on. So thank you for everyone that reached out and supported me, and all the well wishes. I'm doing a lot better now, and I'm back. And I think I'm doing a lot better than the Boston Bruins. We unfortunately, I make my return on a night of one of the ugliest playoff losses in a long, long time, based on the scoreboard anyway, and it was just a surreal night. Weird night. They had to bring in the third string goalie. They got absolutely killed. They didn't respond when they really needed to. And some I thought odd lineup decisions. Strange moments with the officiating. It was a very, very, very bizarre game for Bruins fans, and anyone who's not a Lightning fan. Watch that, and I thought that was wild. So, Ty, do you have any initial thoughts on that loss?
This is now, if you want to include the 5-0 overtime, this is now nine straight periods that they've gotten their asses absolutely kicked. Not good. Not good at all. And I think that if you're concerned, it's legit. I think that there's a little bit of worry here that Halak is turning into a pumpkin, that the scoring has dried up. The second line has been awful all series. And it's just, this is not, you get two games without Ryan McDonagh for the Lightning.
That is the most brutal part, to be honest.
And you put on what are we at now? Combined shots since he's gone out, like 45 shots.
Yeah.
Are they at now?
Understand it.
Not enough pressure at all. And now Friday is a must win. I wrote that column the other day, last night, saying that, you know, now you got to prove this and feel like 2018. This felt like 2018. This felt like throwing yourself into a pretzel here with lineup changes that didn't really make a lot of sense when you thought about them critically. And here you are now. Now you have a basically a must win game four here.
I think what might have hurt the lineup the most was taking Sean Corrali out. But he might have been an injury, right? Do you really think Bruce Cassel would decide to take Sean Corrali out?
No, he's unfit to play. It's not a performance-related issue. He's not a guy they'd take out anyways. If they were looking to send a statement or make a statement to their team, you don't take that guy out, especially when you look at how he played in game two, getting the assist on the game-tying goal. You don't take him out in that situation. So it's injury-related. Cassie did say that they did have a player who would be a game-time decision. Process of elimination says that he was that guy because he did say that it was up front, too. It wasn't on the back end. So
right.
I would imagine that it was Corrali. So he's out. Anders Bjork sits as well. And it's not that – when it comes to the lineup, it's not that the guys they put in didn't play well. I don't think that either Moore nor Lozon were the reason they lost tonight. Their mistakes happened when the game was already over. But it's just that you took out Clifton, who has been one of your better defensemen.
That was odd to me. I didn't understand it. I thought he was really good the first two games.
Yeah, taking him out, especially when
– I thought he'd give you a sort of a combination of what Lozon and Moore can do. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And also, too, the fact that – with this pregame or his morning availability, Cassidy mentioned that Clifton has played forward in Providence. They've done that with him before, so they could theoretically use him if they needed to go at 7D because you could play him at forward sometimes.
Yeah, but that to me is just as crazy as going 7D and 11, you know, whatever. I don't think that should have factored in at all. But
they should have
left him in because of how he was playing.
No, but I'm also saying, like, that's why I thought that if you did go 7D, he was safe because he was sort of the break glass in case emergency option up front if you needed it. So I was surprised to see him scratch. Again, the possession metrics, he's been fantastic. Physical play, he's been good. He had a bad game too, yeah, but I don't know if one bad game gets him in the press box. I mean, you know, Lozon got two bad games. you know, before he was sent to the press box. So a little bit of an interesting series of moves here. I don't really know if they panned out the way that he expected, but now you got to see what he does here for game four.
Yeah, I think, but you touched on the more important thing, which is what the hell happened to the middle six here? Because I thought they were superior in game one, and then the last two games, it feels like, I think disappeared might not be too strong. I don't know. I thought about it for a second, but like, David Krejci was setting up these wingers for scoring chances like throughout the Carolina series, and that and in game one against Tampa, and that's dried up. I don't know what the hell happened, but to me it's just it's coming going back to the same issues in each of their last two series losses, which obviously one of those was to Tampa 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Their biggest guys aren't physical enough. Their fastest guys aren't skilled enough or just aren't finishing enough. And I mean, outside of Brad Marchand's play, is scoring at a high level. But now the top line, besides Marchand, isn't really like showing up to the extent that you need them to against this team.
Yeah,
and on the back end, they're just they can't contain the bigger forwards they have, and they can't get through that bigger defense on Tampa's end. It's just a terrible matchup.
Yeah, this series has really flipped, in my opinion, once the Lightning defensemen started taking shots. John Cooper talked about this after game one as being maybe a focus moving forward, given the fact that Victor Hedman scored two goals by merely throwing it on net. And I think that's been you've noticed that this has been a concerted effort from Tampa Bay to get their defensemen more involved offensively. Let's just look at tonight.
They've been way more active last
tonight,
couple games.
The Tampa Bay blue line had, but tonight alone, the Lightning had 11 shots from their back end. You know how many the Bruins had? Five. And we had five. They more than doubled them up in terms of shots from their blue line. And Sergachev alone had four of those 11. And the Bruins' entire defense had five. I think when you're talking about this goaltending mismatch right now, given the fact that it's Halak / Vladar against a Vezina finalist and Vasilevsky, the fact that the Lightning can throw it on net and basically guarantee that they're going to get a juicy rebound probably 25 to 33% of the time makes a big difference. It makes a big difference, and I think you're seeing it right now.
Yeah, I don't think what we saw in their power play tonight, Tampa's power play, is anything complicated. They were winning the puck, and they're simplifying it and just bombs away against Halak. Well, let's fire away at that low glove side and see what happens. Saw it on the Sergachev goal. I mean, that's just what it seems like happens. But like, I feel like I cursed the Bruins because I wrote how they put on a clinic with their penalty kill in the first game. Mm-hmm. And they really did with the way they were able to break it out so efficiently and the way they just limited them, and they were winning the puck along the boards. But that, I feel like that just hasn't happened at all the last two games. Tampa's starting to beat them with their speed. And now their skill guys are starting to finish more. Point Kucherov. Like you said, they're defensemen. They're just firing away. I feel like I didn't think after the first game, I was like, I don't think getting outshot like this is sustainable. And it's only gotten worse in that mm-hmm. department. And I think you're seeing the obvious result with the goaltending situation.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And it's just a matter of, where do you go from here? You know, what changes can you make? What else can be changed with this team, with this lineup, before you just kind of maybe say Tampa is too deep right now, even without Stamkos and without McDonough? Because, again, these last two games in the second half of game one, it's looked like two teams playing at different speeds right now. You know, it's like watching varsity against JV. And I know the Bruins can score. I've seen it before. But can they score against this kind of defense? Can they score against this kind of goaltender when they're giving up the amount of chances they are at the other end? And so, you know, it's felt like for every four chances the Lightning get, the Bruins get one, maybe two. And again, when you have that difference in the goaltending, it's not a battle you're going to win. You're giving up more than you're generating. And when you look at the skill mismatch and the size mismatch in net on either end, you're not going to win these games. It's as simple as that. So there needs to be an entirely, you know, there needs to be a hard reset here for the Bruins and get back to what they do well. But I don't know if they can do it against this team.
What exactly happened to the defense? Because the first game, I thought they were fine. They were beating them to the puck in the corner. They were getting the puck the hell out of there. Mm-hmm. They were clogging up the neutral zone better than they have. And now, lately, they're getting these, like, big, like, they're getting these big stretch passes going, and they're getting behind the defense easy. They're getting breakaways. Like, I don't know what the hell happened. Maybe they just need to mix up those pairs, like, in a way that we haven't seen. Because what they're doing right now, they don't have the right mix. I don't know.
And I
do you have an explanation for me? That's what I'm begging you for, an explanation.
No,
explanation for the defense.
I don't, except for the fact that they seem all right. So let's look at Carlo and Krug. That pairing hasn't looked good at all. I think this postseason they haven't done enough. They haven't done what we believe they're capable of. What we've seen that they're capable of.
Krug really, but Krug made that one pass to Marshawn for that goal in game one. Yeah, that was game one.
Yeah,
I think that's the only time that he's really made like a big play in any of these games.
Yeah, and then
you got Carlo making mistakes with the puck.
Yeah, this is a step backwards for Carlo. This is a step backwards. This, you know, last year he stepped in and he was pretty good right at the jump, and everyone said, "Wow, he's not having those first playoff jitters." It feels like this is his first postseason. For whatever reason, he just hasn't had the same sort of level of consistency to his game. He can give you more, but maybe you look at this now and maybe you say that, all right, we're going to shake it up now, and you're going to have Chara and Carlo be a pairing, and they just take on all this D-zone work, and you go from there, and you just load up on offensive zone faceoffs for McAvoy and Krug or McAvoy and Grizzlick, whatever the case may be, and you work it out that way. I think that might be the best thing this team can do right now. But the problem with that is that, you know, is a Chara-Carlo pairing, is that good against Braden Point?
I'm talking like Grizzly Carlo, Chara Clifton. You know, I'm talking like something new. You said McAvoy and Krug. I'd be interested in seeing what that looks like.
The biggest problem for me right now is the decisions that the defense is making. I think that's my biggest problem, is that you're seeing a lot of these, especially these last two games. You're seeing a lot of these really soft clearing attempts that are getting intercepted, or they're to no man's land and they're picked off, and then it's an odd man rush out of the way. A big problem for me too is watching this game tonight. It felt that every Lightning goal that was scored, I was going, "Where's the defenseman? Where's the other defenseman right now? Why is he not in the frame?" You know,
they're getting behind him.
Yeah, and it was happening consistently, and you know, that's a problem. You know, again, we're talking about this mismatch with goaltending. You cannot give up 7 odd man rushes a game with the Yaroslav Halak and Dan Vladar as your goaltending duo and expect to do any damage. It's not going to happen.
They can't contain Alex Killorn right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's just...
It's a problem.
I don't know where you go from here with the mix. Like I said, like, they're just... Tampa is the most balanced, complete team in the league. And I would have said this if I was able to do a podcast going into the series. I would have predicted Tampa's going to win the series. But I thought it would go 6 or 7 games. It doesn't look good right now at all for the Bruins. But I mean, I just thought they had more skill. They're faster, definitely bigger. The defense does more of what you need to do in the playoffs than what their defense has done. For their skill sets, anyway. Mm-hmm. And like I said, like, they have a 6'9" defenseman, a 6'5" defenseman, and neither of them, I mean, Chara tried, actually, with the, I forget who he was trying to fight earlier in the game.
Luke Shen.
They should have let him go at it. I mean, it sounded like the digital fans in attendance wanted to see that happen.
Yeah, but,
You can't expect that, though, with their 43-year-old defenseman. That's why it's disappointing that Carlo doesn't sort of have that snarl to him. And I mean, McAvoy sort of does, but I mean, I thought McAvoy started like playing out of his head at points in this game. You started hitting people a little high. I know you're complaining about that misconduct, but I mean, I think they were saying, "All right, kid, you're a little too hot right now. Just get out of here." I think that's what they were saying.
Yeah, maybe they saved him from himself, right? At the end of the day, maybe exactly. That's what happened. And honestly, with a 7-1 game, I really don't need to see any more out of Charlie McAvoy. He's too important for this team
to
risk an injury or risk some sort of bullshit suspension. But I think, you know, a problem that I have with this game is a little bit of what Cassie talked about post game, where that, you know, the Richie slash, it's happening a lot. You're seeing that a lot in these games.
How's your standard run of the mill whack you on the yeah. the thigh?
Yeah,
and what the hell is that?
And it's whistled. Okay, whatever.
And it's easy to blame Richie because I know he's not that. He's not good.
No, but
so people then, blame Richie. Bad penalty. It's like,
but that happens.
You
but 5 minutes.
Calling that.
But 5 minutes before that, you know, Patrick Maroon slew foots John Moore after a whistle right in front of the net, and there's nothing. And so I think that what's happening here is that the temperature has been turned up, but the game isn't turning up with it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not the reason they lost, but I think that when that happens, this happened to them in 2018, and it happened to them at times last year too, where they don't feel like it's being called evenly down the middle. They end up losing their minds and trying to overcompensate by taking matters into their own hands. And I think that's to a degree what happened tonight with, in terms of, you bring up McAvoy's physicality, Chara's physicality, Torrey Krug's physicality. Like, they were pissed because they don't know what they can do versus what Tampa Bay can do.
Yeah, but the Maroon thing, it's just frustrating because the guy's laughing in your face. He beat you for the Stanley Cup last year, and now he's laughing in your face because you don't have someone who can stand up to him, go nose to nose with him, and like match him in terms of his size, strength, and all the physical qualities that he has. He gives Clifton a little elbow in the face, and Clifton like tries to push back, but Clifton's like weighs half as much as the guy.
Yeah,
and it's like everyone hates Patrick Maroon, but I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind if the Bruins had Patrick Maroon right now or someone like him. The closest thing they had to that is Richie, which is why I wrote going into the series. It's like Rich, they need Richie to be that guy, and I don't know necessarily blame Nick Richie because I think they're probably relying on him to do too much for what he is.
And yeah,
they just don't have enough to stand up to that stuff. We saw last summer, and now it's happening again. It's frustrating.
I mean, my problem with Richie is that it's just there's too many of these shifts here where it looks like he's moving at half speed. You know, it looks like he's slower than David Backes sometimes. And there's too many shifts where he's just floating, and you're like, what is the point of the shift? Where is this going? Where are you going? And if this is what he's going to give you, hey, you know, that's great. He shoveled a goal in game two, but you know, Trent Frederick is here, right? Trent Frederick was the leading fighter in the AHL last year, plays with some tenacity, has a little bit more speed to his game.
I would consider,
you know, you got to look at this and say, okay, well, what
wouldn't be the first time here? They brought McAvoy up to make his NHL debut in that series against Ottawa.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And
well, he played in Providence, but yeah, it was his NHL debut. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, and Frederick has obviously played in the NHL. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd consider it. They really need more of it. I'm sorry. They do. Everyone loves harp on, like, no, put Stadik in. And I would like to see Stadik in the next game. Maybe see someone who could actually at least try to finish. But
I would put Stadik in over Bjork. If I'm going back to a 12 forward grouping, which I think if Corrali's okay, they're probably gonna, I would imagine. I don't think that you saw enough from either Lozon or Moore to say that they're definitively in over Clifton. I think you go back to that and you go back to 12 forwards, and that's where you debate, okay, who do you want to put in here? Do you want to put in Bjork or do you want to give Sednika a look? I think that Sednika did a better job of getting to the high danger areas, creating chances for his line mates, and going from there. I think Bjork has looked, you know, I've been waiting for it with Anders Bjork now the entire postseason. It just seems like the moment's been too big for him consistently. And tonight they go with 7D over dressing him. And
he seems to have gotten less and less focused and more and more sloppy as the postseason has gone on. So I don't know, maybe it's physically wearing on him, but I don't know. I don't think you could put him back in, but I think just back to the problem with Rich, like, this just goes back to the problems that they're having with the second and third line. It took Nick Richie shoveling manure under the goalie's ass for someone in the middle six to put the puck in the net.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't have it.
What do you get?
And like DeBrusk and Kasha not finishing their chances has finally caught up with them, and now they're not getting as many looks as they were before. Because I guess they're sort of keying on Krejci. Or Krejci is just doesn't have the jump that he had in the Carolina series or even in game one against Tampa. But like the middle six to me is the big problem, honestly. If the middle six were finishing more, these would be different games. They could dictate the pace of them, and you know, they could just play like you said, maybe a defensive lineup, Chara, Carlo, sit on a lead. Like, I think the lack of finishing by pretty much everyone other than Marshawn in their top nine is the big issue that, like, I don't know what you could say other than they just have to be better. They have to finish on these opportunities. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you go back to tonight's game. They don't really have a third line right wing. The closest, it seems like Wagner got the majority of those shifts with Richie and with Coyle. The entire Krejci line, 0 points. The entire Coyle line, 0 points. And that, again, you're not going to beat Tampa if you're not getting those contributions. And, you know, it's like the fourth line production is a bonus. When you get that, great, awesome, everything's clicking. And the first line, if they're going to be held in check, you need those five, six players, you know, five if you dress in as 7D, to deliver. And I thought that tonight was especially bad, somehow worse than game two from the Krejci line. Just nothing. Not a single shift or moment that I went, oh, that was almost a scoring chance for them. Just
I know, I say they have to finish. They didn't even really have the opportunities tonight. But, I guess I'm going back to game two with that.
But it's a real problem. It's a real problem is that you know, they're not generating enough. Again, with Ryan McDonagh out, you know, it's almost like
Colbert. That is the most mind-boggling thing to me. I thought this was their big opportunity to take control, and Tampa has responded way better than they have.
Yeah.
That is for damn sure.
Yeah, and so here they are. Let's see.
Cassie said after the game his least favorite thing was the response.
Yeah, and that was my least favorite.
The first two goals were like, I mean, the call is one thing, but like the power play just fired away on Halak, and he's just not going to stop every shot if you fire enough. And but then, I mean, the second goal was obviously trash, and hopefully Bruce Cassidy just paid $25,000 to buy them some, you know, gift calls.
Well, or
maybe
they
can have the linesman tackle someone.
What annoys me is that, you know, they give up those two goals, 15 seconds. And, yeah, it sucks. But, you know, you end the period with a strong ozone shift from the Bergeron line. And it's like, if you get a goal there, if you get something actually on net there, you know, maybe something changes. And maybe you go from there. It's just – so I'm with Cassie that the response was a bummer because there was none. There was none. They were in their own head, down 2-0, and the game was over. The game was over at 2-0. It just was. Even when they scored, when it was 3-1, it was like, nah, this is over. Doesn't matter because they weren't getting anything. There was no positive momentum generated after that break. They let that break just destroy them, you know. And for me, that's the most annoying part is that the second period, they're down by two. You know how many shots they had in the second period? They finished with like 7 or 8. For the first 15 minutes, they had two shots on goal in the first 15 minutes of the second period. You're not going to win shit when you do that. And that's what happened. I mean, it's just, again, you need to break through this defense. You need to find ways to generate some looks. And if you're not going to pack it in, it's over. You're going to lose the series in 5 games. If you cannot get to the middle of the ice and generate chances, if your defenseman cannot get some shots on goal and get some grimy looks from some of your middle six players, you know, DeBrusque is good in front of the net. I've seen that before. You know, Richie, that's how he scored his goal. Coyle, we know he can tip some pucks in. So let's get back to that. Let's see that happen. Because if you're not going to, this is over in 5 games. Simple as that.
I think they have to outwork them. I mean, that's what they did in the first game. They outworked them when they were trying to – when they tried to dump it in along the boards, the Bruins would have two back checkers, or if they got it down low, they would beat them to the puck and just hit them until – grind them down until they had possession. And then they got a nice, easy, smooth breakout out along the side boards. That has just evaporated in the last two games. Tampa, I think, has just decided we're going to start winning these puck battles. But I think that, yeah, they have to get back to doing that, or else, I mean, they really have no chance, I don't think. It's looking like 2 years ago. Like, I don't get how you could be at any way confident they go back, because until they win more than one game against this team in series, like, I don't know how you could feel in any way confident.
No, exactly, and that's an issue. You know, it's the thing that was bothering me the most, and still is bothering me. Just the soft clears to no man's land, and the just throwing it away. You know, and I understand that Lightning have a bigger team, so maybe you got to have a little bit of self-preservation here and not take as many hits, you know, as you would against most teams. But there's been a lot of just conceding possession and letting Tampa come the other way. And Tampa's too good to do that. And so, yeah, it's going to feel like 2018 until they snap out of that.
I think it just goes back to my overall take on the roster, I think. It's just that, mm-hmm. I just don't think they have the right combination of skills. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. They haven't proven that they can get past a team that has enough size, speed, skill, defense, goaltending. I just don't know that they have enough in any of those departments.
Well, this comes back to the deadline, you know. Would things be different right now if they didn't have a 4-month break between games? Maybe,
yeah.
but do you believe in Richie and Kasha being that much more of an upgrade over David Backes and Danton Heinen?
Tampa already had a better roster, and they went out and got Maroon, Coleman, and Goodrow.
Yeah, and they added
Shattenkirk. Tell me who's
agency.
Yeah, tell me who may have the better haul there.
Yeah, and they paid.
They lost Stamkos, which is the scariest part. They're doing this without Stamkos.
Yeah, but again, it if this series, if this team goes out with a whimper and goes out with nothing from their middle six, you're going to be able to turn around and say that you were in a worse spot than you were a year ago when you had Danton Heinen and David Backes in your middle six. It's not even a debate. It'll be factual that you got less from your replacements for those players than you got from them a year ago. And that's, you know, the long-term benefits of these guys might be better than what you're getting from those two, sure. But if we're looking at it on the surface that you got more 2019 out of those guys who are no longer here, you want to throw Marcus Johansson in there, go for it, than you did their replacements. And you can include Anders Bjork in that, a healthier Bjork, than you did right now. So that's frustrating too, is that they didn't prioritize the right kind of players at a deadline. You know, if these guys post donuts for the rest of the series, that it's a fact. It's not a debate. It's a fact that you did not get the right kind of guys for your team at the deadline.
They signed Charlie Coyle to a long-term extension, but I think they have to start thinking about getting him some real line mates. And if they had like two other guys that play similar to him and have a similar, like if they're 6'2", 6'3", and they forecheck hard and they possess the puck well, I think mm-hmm. you can build a good line there. I just don't think it's working out with what they're putting out there right now. And DeBrusque just hasn't, for some reason, he's just snake bit. Besides that one game where he scored twice, he's been invisible on the score sheet anyway. Kasha I've liked for the most part, but like most players, the last two games he's sort of fallen off, and now they didn't finish their opportunities earlier. Now the opportunities aren't there, like I was saying before. Yeah, I just don't think they made enough moves at the deadline. They didn't get a good enough player for what they needed. Sure, mm-hmm. They needed to. I wouldn't have minded a player like Richie, just a lot better than him, like Patrick Maroon, perhaps, just to name someone at random.
And honestly, you look at this team right now, and I like the Kasha move. I like it still, but at a certain point, you got to break through. You got to score a goal. You know, it's great that you're creating chances. It's great that you're setting up your line mates, David Krejci. But David Krejci was never the shooter on his line. He's not supposed to be that guy. He's supposed to be the one setting guys up. So that would be a failure. And with Coyle and with Richie, keep in mind that Coyle has never thrived with another big body in Boston. It's always been guys that are considered analytics darlings, like Heinen, Bjork, Johansson. You know, so are you trying to fit a square peg into a round hole here by putting Richie with Coyle and hoping for the best? And so that's an issue as well. That it's great. Again, it's great that he shoveled a goal in game two. But what's he doing moving forward? You know, is he building on that? Tonight, I don't think he built on that. And yeah, to your point about giving Coyle some line mates, yeah, look at game one. Bjork and Richie played fourth line minutes in that game. He didn't have line mates. You know, that guy that you're trusting to be your third line stabilizer, Coyle, didn't have line mates that are appropriate of those skill set. And you go tonight, he has one winger tonight. Richie's his only winger tonight. And you rotate some different guys there with him, but you know, what you're getting out of Charlie Coyle feels like a friggin' miracle right now, because you're giving him almost nothing to work with, and it's getting less and less each game, it feels.
Does it feel like they're playing keep away with him? I just feel like he hasn't had the puck enough, and you notice him when he has the puck, because he's so good at holding on to it and protecting it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you think they're just – or maybe – are they mugging – I've seen them mug him with multiple guys. They say, like, they try to minimize him just having the puck in general, it seems.
Yeah, I would say that there's definitely that at play. I mean, he's winning the battles that he's generating, but he's not getting in nearly as much as he typically would, and I think some of that was reflective tonight with his line mates. Richie's never going to be the first guy in, you know, and force a turnover. It's just not really his speed.
And they tried him. They've tried sending him in.
And so that's an issue. You know, so I don't know. It's just this lineup needs a little bit of a little bit more speed and a little bit more tenacity all at the same time. You know, and that's – I noticed that.
Yeah, they just need to get bigger and a little more skill and a little more physicality. And they can skate better. And they can kill penalties better. They move the puck a little better too.
You know, their
defense could use a little size, and they could hit more. You know, like, that's, I feel like – I don't know. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills that I just keep saying this stuff over and over again. And I don't know. Maybe I'm making a straw man here, but people go, you know, no. They don't need to be the big bad Bruins anymore. And it's like, that's not really what I'm saying. But yeah. I don't know how you could watch that team that we watched tonight and the team we watched in that game 7 last June and the team we watched lose 4 straight to the same Tampa team 2 years ago. Tell me that everything's all right in terms of their roster makeup. I just don't know how you can tell. And now they have one of their top guys scoring. Mm-hmm. First line, you can. I'll give the first line credit for showing up just with the way Marchand's been playing, and Pastrnak's been setting him up. So I mean, now the problem is the secondary scoring and pretty much the whole defense and the goaltending. So
yeah, and
I know I sound awfully pessimistic, but I mean I don't know how else you expect me to sound after a game like that.
No, is it pessimistic or is it realistic? You know, I just think that.
I think I'm being realistic.
This is a mix of how the last two postseasons ended, right? Where you were relying on your first line and your power play to win you games, and you're not generating enough against a bigger defense. You know, this is a combination of what ended your last two postseason runs, culminating in these last, you know, 160 minutes plus of hockey. You've seen that now. You've seen a mix of how your last two seasons ended before your very eyes now. So, no, I don't think it's pessimistic. I think it's realistic to say that, you know, holy shit, these guys might be in actual trouble here. They might be in trouble if they don't get something tangible from the rest of the roster and soon. And what's frustrating for me is I just don't see how this quick fix happens. I don't see – there's no missing, you know, formula right now. You can put Bjork back in. Great. He's going to play 12 minutes, and he's probably going to miss the net on his 3 shot attempts. Awesome. You can put Sanika in. He's never played, you know, against a team like Tampa Bay before in a postseason game, so who knows if he can break through Luke Shen and Braden Coburn or even Mikhail Sergachev. Who knows if he can do that? You know, you can go to, okay, they get Corrali back. All right, does that jumpstart the third line or the second line? Because he plays on the fourth line, you know? And so there is no magic formula to get this team back on track here. It's just they need to play a lot better than what we've seen in these last two games, but I don't know if they can against this team because this team has had such an advantage over these last two games. It has been so noticeable. It has been men against boys out there. So can they do it? I don't know. I don't think anyone has that right answer right now.
Size and skill. Please, can we get guys with size and skill? For the love of Christ. And if you get someone who's big, can he hit someone, please? Can he get in Pat Maroon's face so he's not laughing at us? Like you know, the worst nightmare bullies of our youth. I'm getting tired of it.
I mean, at some point, right? Like, you know, doesn't Richie or one of these guys have to sort of force the issue with Pat Maroon?
Yeah.
Don't they have to? Instead of don't let him laugh in your face, you know, go to him and make him answer. I mean, that's one of the things I thought Richie would do. Listen, I know David Backes would do it. And I was big on not having David Backes in this lineup. But you know that he wouldn't stand for that. He wouldn't let Pat Maroon laugh in your face. He'd go right up to him and do something. He'd make him answer the bell. Even if it was bad for his health, he would have done it. And so that's a problem, I think, is that if Richie's not going to do that, him coasting at 500, you know, at 50% speed and shoveling every now and then, it's not going to do it for me. Not going to do it for me. I'd rather see Trent Frederick in there.
You still need that element to win in the playoffs. You do. I don't get why people think that you can just abandon that and just go all speed and skill. You have to be able to – like Nathan MacKinnon has speed and skill, and he absolutely ragdolled someone. I think it might have been the Arizona series. Mm-hmm. And, like, that was one of the most exciting things I've ever seen. Because, like, wow, this kid's the most electric player in the NHL, and he just threw someone to the ice because he was pissed. And I think they might have been up 6-1 at the time. So I was like, oh, that is one of the most badass things I've ever seen. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I just –
Well, let's cut back to
– Maybe Marshawn has to tune someone up. Remember when he tuned up Lars Eller other 7-1 game against the Capitals? I don't know.
But let's cut back to – in January, what got Brett Ritchie put on waivers? It was not doing something physically, you know, when the Bruins were getting what they felt were pushed around. Okay, so is his brother going to do something now? Or do you get the wrong Ritchie, like Sweeney joked about? You know, are both Ritchies going to be bust here in Boston, or are they going to do something to combat some of the things that you're talking about?
I don't know. I don't think it's fair to say Nick Richie's a bust. I just don't think he's good enough. I just think they needed to do better than him as far as an acquisition of the deadline to give them size and be able to push back and play heavy against these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So too late for that now, I guess.
Well, let's see. What do you think about Friday's game four? What do you think is gonna?
Well, that all being said, I think they tie the series. I don't see them losing three in a row. I think they're going to show some pride. I think the first line is going to have a great game, and I think someone in the middle six is finally going to step up. And I just feel that's what's going to happen. I think they know they have to know now that they have to outwork these guys for loose pucks. They have to win those gritty battles to be able to win, because they can't keep up with them in terms of the combination of size, speed, skill, and puck move—they've been overwhelmed in the last 2 years, especially tonight. And so I think they got to get back to just putting more effort in them and show them that they really want the series. I know that's simple-minded. That's a simple-minded take, but
no,
that's
I think
the reality.
But the other thing I'll say too is that I think that maybe it was telling, maybe it was a long shower. I don't know, but there was a sizable gap between Bruce Cassidy's press conference ending and Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron's beginning. There's many reasons for this, you know, possibly, but I do wonder if there was a little bit of a meeting there with the players saying, hey, game three was not what this team is. So let's get this out of our minds and get focused for game four. So to your point, seeing that kind of effort wouldn't surprise me if that is indeed what happened. We're not going to know what happened. Char will always keep everything in the room. He'll never talk about this, so it'll have to get leaked out by somebody else. But that is something that I think is worth noting heading into game four, is that they may have been smacked in the mouth here, and if they have any sort of pride, they're going to come out guns blazing in game four. And Cassie complaining about the officiating, if history has told us anything, it will give them a few gift power plays.
Yeah,
come game four.
I threw that in earlier. I didn't know if you noticed, but yeah, I think he did just buy them some, buy them a nice tackle or two from the refs for that $25,000 he's gonna get hit with.
I mean, and honestly, before we get out of here, we need to talk about that real quick. What? Where are you going? What is the game plan there? Where you go? I will get out of the way.
Yeah, he stepped into him.
I was out of the way by moving into the center of the ice.
He was playing left tackle. It was crazy.
It was a pancake. That was one pancake.
a total pancake.
Yeah, and so I haven't seen that happen.
This quick pancake.
I haven't seen that happen since it happened to Weidman back in 2010.
I feel like that's the first time I've seen an official during a game. In like years, I usually just don't notice these guys, except when they're calling a penalty, when they're in between whistles calling a penalty. the middle of the action like that, that was nuts.
It happened to Dennis Wyman in 2010.
And how do you legislate? How do you legislate that? You can't like take the goal away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's just a. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's again.
I don't want to say it's a horrible, a bad break is an easy way to put it. Mm-hmm. Just an unfortunate accident or whatever, but
yeah,
it's something that should never happen.
Yeah, you really can't blow at the
play. Joe, we talk about the refs inserting themselves into games. We didn't mean you literally take your body and you insert it into the play.
I don't even know what to make of it, really. Like, yeah, to your point, you really can't do anything about it, per se. The other thing I would say, too, is, okay, where is Lozon's partner? You know, again, what we talked about earlier. Right. Okay, well, that happens. Where's his partner? Because the closest guy there was Charlie Coyle. You know, so what's his partner doing? Why isn't he, also there as line of defense as well? So everything that could have gone wrong tonight went wrong tonight. Whether these are indictments against the franchise's roster building, like we've kind of talked about, remains to be seen. But I know that it can't get worse than it got tonight. And I thought that after game two. So we're going to see now what happens here heading into game four.
Yeah, the bright side is it's only 2-1. You know, it's they didn't get an extra win because they won by 6 goals. So that's why they just have to put that game behind them as much as they can and just act like pretty much play the next game like they're facing elimination because they really are. I think, but they're not going to win 3 in a row if they go down 3-1. I don't think so.
No, especially with the back-to-back with 6 and 7, it's just too much. What I will say too is that, as bad as tonight was, it only counts for one. And remember last year's game three against St. Louis? The Bruins kicked the crap out of them. It was 2-1. And I thought that series was over. I went, that's it.
I think I wrote a whole column. Like, I don't know what the Blues are going to do here. So I guess I didn't learn my lesson from that.
Yeah. And
but
we saw
I'm
that.
Also judging just on the 2 years ago and just their history against this team. Mm-hmm. And the way these rosters stack up against each other. I don't know how you could have any confidence.
No, and that's understandable. I just, let's see how game four plays out. But I'm with you in the sense that I think being pessimistic right now is realistic, given the lack of contributions you've seen from this middle six, especially with McDonough out. I thought you'd see more, and the fact that you're not makes me think that this roster is just a little bit too deep for the Bruins. So they'll have a chance to handle it, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I think we can leave it at that. We've exhausted a wild, surreal night of hockey. Very bad for the Bruins, very good for the Lightning. But we shall see what happens in game four on a Friday. And if you made it this far, thank you very much. Hopefully this is, a little therapeutic for you. I appreciate you going this far, and hopefully you rate and review us, and we'll get back to doing more of these podcasts. I appreciate everyone's patience waiting for us to come back. I know we have a handful of fans who are waiting for it patiently. So thank you very much. Sports Hub Sidelines, Bruins post-game bonus episode. We'll talk to you again soon.